Our last case this morning is 13-1623, the Disciplinary Council versus Judge Joy Malik Oldfield. Mr. Caligiuri.
May it please the court, Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of this court. I'm Joe Caligiuri. I represent the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in this matter. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The sole issue before the court today is whether Judge Oldfield violated the Code of Judicial Conduct, Rule 1.3, abusing the prestige of judicial office to advance her own personal interests and the interests of her friend, Catherine Loya. Comment 1 to Rule 1.3 states it's improper for a judge to allude to a judicial status in order to gain favorable treatment in encounters with traffic officials. And that is what exactly occurred in the early morning hours of February 5, 2012. He later asserts that there are three reasons why this court should rule that Judge Oldfield violated 1.3. The first reason, and the most important reason, is that Judge Oldfield's own testimony and her own words during the disciplinary hearing proved that she violated 1.3. When Officer Ballinger initially asked Catherine Loya and Judge Oldfield for identification, he went back to his vehicle to run their information. At that point, Judge Oldfield testified that her and Ms. Loya began speaking about what may happen to them. And Ms. Loya told the judge, he's just going to run her information and probably let us go. At that point, Ms. Loya saw two additional police cruisers arrive at the scene. And she said to the judge, uh-oh, there's only two reasons why there's more cars here. Either I'm getting arrested or one of us has a warrant. And at that point, the judge agreed to saying this. She said to Ms. Loya, you cannot get arrested. I'm a judge. You can't get arrested. I can't be with someone who gets arrested. So we know what she was thinking at that point in time.
But she didn't say that to the officers, correct?
No, she said to Ms. Loya.
To her friend.
Yes.
So why is that relevant to whether she was using her position with respect to the officers?
Because that sets the stage for what she did continuously after that.
In terms of all of the statements, I mean, there are lots of them that we can go through. Aren't those all credibility determinations that the panel could make and decide she was not attempting to use her position?
I think some of them are credibility determinations, but if you just focus on what the judge said herself, what she admits to saying, then there can be really no other alternative than to find a violation when you use an objective standard. For instance, when Officer Price arrived at the scene, Ms. Loya was being arrested. He walked up to the side of the car where Judge Oldfield was, and this is in the board's report. And Judge Oldfield said to him, this is very embarrassing. And he said, I'm sure it is, ma'am. I understand. And she said, no, you don't understand. I'm a judge. This is very embarrassing. Officer Price didn't even know she was a judge when he went up there. She gratuitously gave that information to him.
So what should judges do in that situation? Just say nothing and not identify themselves at all?
No, I don't think that would be reasonable under the circumstances. I think they're allowed to identify themselves if asked. For instance, if the officer said, ma'am, what's your name? She could have said, Joy Oldfield. Ma'am, when he said, she claims that one of the officers said, what are you, some kind of lawyer? She said, yes, I am a lawyer, I was a lawyer, and now I'm a judge.
Counsel, are you suggesting that in that interchange between the judge and the officer, it was improper for her to identify herself as a judge?
I don't think at that point I would say that it was actually improper and a violation of the rule. I think it was not appropriate to do.
Does the violation of the rule come in your opinion then?
The violation of the, well, if I could just step back one moment. The violation of the rule would come after that encounter when she repeatedly refers to herself as a judge in conjunction with admitting to ask for special consideration. She wanted to get out of this situation to avoid the negative publicity that might come about.
Isn't that true of every person under arrest?
Absolutely. But the code under 1.2 in the comments, it says a judge must accept the restrictions imposed by this code in both their personal and professional lives. That's a sacrifice that all of you and all the judges have to make.
She wasn't worried about the fact that she was going to get arrested. She was worried about being with her friend who was going to be arrested. And
correct.
According to the record, her statements were, what can I do to help my friend after identifying herself as a judge, and then saying, I'm not trying to use my position as a judge in any way, but what can I do to help my friend?
Exactly. She's sending the message every time she uses that false disclaimer, as I would put it, that you're dealing with a judge. You're not dealing with an ordinary citizen. The disclaimer is almost meaningless. If
but she
anything,
doesn't deny that she asked, what method could I employ to help my friend? That's uncontroverted.
Exactly. Right.
So, I mean, if you want to put it in the context of a two non-lawyer, non-judges caught in the same situation, if, I mean, I don't understand, I mean, I can't fathom how the person who's not being arrested would turn to the officer and saying, gee, I know my friend is being arrested here. What can I do to help him
exactly.
on the scene? What could a person who was not a judge, not a lawyer, do to help a friend on a scene?
Exactly. The only reason why she felt that she could make that request was because she was a judge. It's uncomfortable for a layperson to do that. We do not need judges.
Is that what the panel found? I thought the panel found that she was not trying to influence the officer not to arrest her son, her friend.
Right. The panel found that based on Officer Price's testimony, they applied a subjective standard.
I guess I'd like to follow Justice French's question then. What is the standard today? Are you inviting us to reweigh what the panel found to be lacking?
Yes. And what I'm asking is that this court view this case under an objective standard, that an objective observer would feel that the judge was whether the judge was abusing the prestige of the office.
The chief's question, though, a non-lawyer confronted with this situation obviously would be saying, "Can I just take them home?"
Right. In this situation,
is that improper? Is that improper
for a non-lawyer?
Sure. Say, can we stop this proceeding short of an arrest?
I think that a non-lawyer would be risking a reaction by the officers for involving themselves in an official proceeding. And I think it's even more egregious for a judge to feel that she could state that she's a judge, admittedly, repeatedly, and then ask the police officers to give her special treatment so that her friend can get out of a situation.
Officer Price testified he did not believe she was seeking any preferential treatment. Isn't that his testimony?
It was, and that's why we're here, because we're saying the panel looked solely at his testimony and said, you know what, he didn't think she was doing anything wrong, so therefore we don't think she did anything wrong.
He's not doing something wrong. He didn't think she was seeking preferential treatment.
Right. He didn't think that she was abusing the office or mentioning her title to obtain.
So you're asking us to make a determination based on reading the comments that it was seeking preferential treatment.
All I'm asking is that you apply the objective standard, and a reasonable person would say, if you have a judge that's telling a police officer that she's a judge and admitting that she's asking for special treatment, that's abusing the prestige of the office. The reason why the subjective...
But she said she did not want preferential treatment.
She wanted the arrest to be, she wanted a lawyer not to be arrested. That's special consideration or special treatment. She was saying,
why is that
I don't want, she
why
was
is that
saying,
special? Isn't that what everyone wants when their friend is being arrested?
Sure, but we don't want judges telling police officers, hey, cut me a break here.
But I'm following Justice O'Donnell's question. The police officer did not believe that she was looking for special treatment. She stated she was not seeking special treatment. And you want us to find, contrary to what the officer who could give special treatment felt, we should find that she did want special treatment.
But the other officer that heard her say, would it help if I told you I was a judge, he did think she was abusing the prestige. That's the problem with the subjective standard. The panel looked at one officer's, two officers perceiving the same event came to different conclusions. If you apply an objective standard, you avoid that inconsistent outcome, and you would find that an objective person would believe that that's exactly what she was doing. And she admits the fact that she asked the officer for special consideration. What she's saying is, her disclaimer was, I'm not asking for special consideration because I'm a judge. But make no mistake about it, she was asking for special consideration, and she will admit that.
If she hadn't identified herself as a judge and just said, please don't arrest my friend, and it attempted to persuade in other ways, we wouldn't be here on this point. You're saying it's the use of the title and saying the word judge repeatedly,
right,
that suggests to an objective observer that it's the use of the title that's the tool for the request.
That's correct. And one of the things that I would like to state sort of preemptively is that Mr. Johnson will tell you that what the board found was that Officer Garner, who did not testify, basically said to Judge Oldfield initially when they were arresting Catherine Loya, what are you, some kind of lawyer? And she responded, yes, I'm a lawyer, but now I'm a judge. It's important to note in the record.
I've been looking at the report and I'm listening to this, and in any other kind of case, if a lawyer stood out there and said, well, this is what so-and-so said who didn't testify, we'd be dropping an anvil on you.
Right. Well, that's actually, I'm asking you to drop an anvil on that testimony, because what I'm saying is that what Judge Oldfield is stating is that Officer Garner asked her a question and she just responded honestly. She's the only one that testified to that. Her own witness, Catherine Loya, who was in the car at the time, said that Officer Garner asked Loya if she was a lawyer. So I would just like the court to keep that in mind. There's great dispute over whether or not Officer Garner asked Judge Loya anything.
Do you think that, you know, what are you, a lawyer? Does that necessarily, I mean, the answer would have been yes. I mean, all judges are lawyers.
Right.
You didn't have to follow it up with, oh, and by the way, I'm now a judge.
Absolutely.
You know, I am a lawyer, and that would have been permissible to answer that question. But the additional, I'm a judge, right, which he doesn't dispute saying,
right,
is that's problematic.
I would agree, 100%.
Counsel, I guess I want to move you on to the other area, too. It sounds like you're asking us for some bright line rules here today. I guess when around a police officer, we're not to say we're judges. But more importantly, are you suggesting in your second branch that judges can no longer sit on cases if they have friends who are counsel?
No, I'm not suggesting that at all. Are you speaking regarding the recusal issues?
Yes, sir. It seems to me that you're pushing the idea that if a judge has a friend, that they cannot have that friend appear before them. Is that your position?
Not at all, no.
What is your position?
Our position is just as the board found, that given the totality of the circumstances here, the relationship with Catherine Loya, the fact that she was staying at the respondent's house, she was with her during an arrest, transporting her to and from work, providing her dinner, that goes above and beyond just a casual friendship between a lawyer and a judge. I mean, there are countless attorneys that are friends with judges that we would have no issue with them appearing in front of.
So let's move forward. If we find that the board inappropriately dismissed this count, what would your requested sanction be? Would it be the same still, a public reprimand?
We did ask for the same sanction in this matter, a public reprimand. And our reason for doing that was we're really concerned about the principal in this case. We need to send a message that you cannot engage in this type of behavior. We do recognize that Judge Oldfield had been on the bench for a month. This situation is not likely to repeat itself. I'm sure she's learned from some of her indiscretions in this case. But we are not asking that the sanction be increased, despite asking for a finding that she violated the
rule. Well, she's been punished in god-awful ways, hasn't
yes.
she? Because this officer claimed that there were things going on that made the papers that were enormously embarrassing, and the panel found that there was a lack of proof.
They did find it was
on things that, I mean, the normal public reprimand would be a walk in the park compared to what this judge has gone through in the newspapers.
I don't disagree with that. I would just say that, you know, obviously we placed that officer under oath. We believe that officer. The panel found it was inconclusive, given the he said, she said nature of things. But I would agree with you that Judge Oldfield has suffered from the publicity from this event. Again.
Well, I think I you know, we get the clips and read the, didn't they even bring the car and attempt to demonstrate to, it's almost a physical impossibility to have going on what the police officer was claiming.
That is true. And the reason why it was even part of the case was to go to Justice O'Neill's issue. When we were trying to establish that she needed to recuse herself from those cases, that episode that the officer testified to played a role in our belief.
In that part. So if that's out, then the need for recusal is more problematic.
If that information is out?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry. And even without that, the board still found that given the subsequent relationship with Ms. Loya, she still needed to recuse herself and did. Okay. So we would just ask that this court find that Judge Oldfield did violate 1.3. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. May it please the court, George Johnson for respondent Joy Oldfield. The panel in this case correctly found that there was no clear and convincing evidence that the judge either gratuitously identified herself as a judge or that the judge attempted to use her office to obtain special treatment. Mr. Caligiuri has said that the officers testified differently. Well, the officers testified differently than one another. What Officer Ballinger testified to was not corroborated by any other witness, including the other officers. What Officer Garner wrote in his report was not corroborated by any of the officers who testified, or the respondent, or Ms. Loya. So the only consistency in the testimony is between the respondent and Officer Price. And I want to talk about that because I want to talk about that in a minute because it happens chronologically later. So it's important to realize how this situation unfolds. When Officer Price or Ballinger first approaches the car and asks Judge for her identification, she says she doesn't have a driver's license because she doesn't. He asks for her name or social security number, and she asks if she has to provide that. So far from asserting herself into this situation, she's trying to minimize who she is. She hears from Loya and from the officer, Ballinger, that she has to give that information, and she does, and he goes back to the car. When he comes back to the car, Officer Garner arrives and Officer Price arrives. The judge starts saying at that point, I'm the one who's been drinking. The Garner and Ballinger come up to the driver's side and say, in kind of a stage whisper, I smell alcohol, don't you? Yes, I do. And Joy Oldfield says, I'm the one that's been drinking. Come around to my side of the car. She hasn't had anything to drink. That doesn't work. They take Loya out of the car to do field sobriety tests. So she is not sitting in the car when Garner asks the judge, what are you, some kind of a lawyer? Because Garner says, if she's sober, if she hasn't been drinking, why won't she take the field sobriety tests? And the respondent says, because they're not always effective. They're not always accurate. And that prompts the question, what are you, some kind of a lawyer? And she says, actually, I've been a lawyer for quite a while, and now I'm a judge. Chief Justice, I'm a lawyer would have been a half-truth. I'm a lawyer is not an accurate description of who she is at that moment.
But that's all I asked. Are you a lawyer?
And yes, an answer to simply yes would have been a half-truth, I think. Because if someone asks you, you know, are you a lawyer? I assume your response is, yes, I'm a lawyer, and I'm employed as a judge, the Justice of the Supreme Court.
That's not my response. I'm a lawyer if that's the question that's being asked.
The once that information is elicited by Officer Garner, everything that happens after that is related to that, because now it's out there that she's a judge. And Garner is particularly aggravating because he is sarcastic to her and says, it finishes every interaction with her with the word judge. So what she started with before she had to say that she was a judge was, my friend has not been drinking, and she wanted to continue with that after she had identified herself as a judge. And that's what she said repeatedly to Price. Price took her down to the station. Price testified, she asked him once, is there anything I, respondent, can do to help my friend? With the caveat, I'm not asking for any special leeway.
And who was the arresting officer here?
Ballinger.
So she's asking another officer.
She's being transported to the jail by another officer.
Okay.
And
well, Why are three policemen out at this scene?
The first officer called in and said that there was a suspicious vehicle. The routine apparently is if the other officers aren't otherwise occupied, they come as backup.
So he made the call before he approached the vehicle?
I think that's accurate.
All right.
Bryce also testified that she asked him once, is there anything you can do to help my friend? I'm not asking for any special favors. She's trying to find a way to prove to the police that Catherine Loya has not been drinking. And what she arrives at with Officer Price is, you can't go back to see her in the booking area, but you can call her on the telephone. Now, this is crucially important because it shows what her motivation is. When she is allowed to talk to Catherine Loya on the telephone, which Ballinger admits is not a special treatment, other people are allowed to do that who aren't judges. Her words to Catherine Loya are, why don't you take the breath test? Because she believes that Catherine Loya has not been drinking. So we don't have a judge who's seeking special treatment for someone she's affiliated with who she thinks or knows is guilty of the charge. She is asking for a way to get what she believes is a just result in this situation. My friend hasn't been drinking. Who will listen to me? Nobody will listen to you. The police are doing what they're doing. Okay, can I talk to Loya? And what she says to Loya is, she says this, and Loya agrees to it, take the breathalyzer. And the lawyer is a public defender, and she's got baggage with these tests, and she decides not to take it. That's a different story in a different case. But what there was no way for this judge once...
And Loya fully understands that's going to be a bad outcome if you haven't been drinking. It's a really stupid thing to do, right?
I assume.
All right.
Price is the one that interacts with her the most about this. And his testimony is really important when you're determining her intent, because he doesn't perceive her to be asking for special treatment. Now, there is no way that you can make 1.3 an objective standard. The comment to 1.3 says, a judge shall not use or attempt to use the judicial office. Attempt is a word that implies intent. One cannot unintentionally attempt an act. So the motivation, the subjective intent of the respondent is written into the rule. And there is no room here in this record for you to find that there was clear and convincing evidence and that the panel and the board missed it. It is, this conduct is distinguishable easily from the two New York cases that are cited by Relator. Both of those instances, the judge took an overt act that wasn't asked for. In the first instance, the Werner case, the police officer asked for driver's license and registration. The judge produced those two documents and a judicial ID card.
Counsel, if staying on your final subject there, or the last one, what is your understanding of what we're doing here today? Is this a de novo proceeding?
It is a de novo proceeding, but you're being asked to change, you're being asked to rewrite Rule 1.3. You're being asked to turn 1.3 into an objective rule where a panel of finder...
Assuming some of us don't believe that can be done, get past that for a moment. What about the evidence and the people who testified? Do we give any deference to the panel or the board?
You should, of course, give deference to the panel and the board because the panel had the opportunity to judge the credibility of these witnesses. Garner didn't testify. Price testified in accordance with respondent. And Ballinger was the witness who tried to make this sexual conduct case. And his testimony was not credible, as evidenced by the fact that the hearing panel said, we're not buying that. That's not part of the case.
So your position this morning would be that the panel was absolutely right in not use of influence, but a little bit confused on whether or not she should have recused?
Well, Your Honor, there is an objective standard in 211 and 1.2. And it was clearly the respondent's intent to do the right thing because she contacted the prosecutor and she contacted the public defender and she got an ethics opinion. This is a judge who's been a judge for 4 weeks. And so she tried to do the right thing. And what the panel said was, that's nice. When we look at this, as a member of the public might look at it, we think that it was improper and you should have recused. So all of the proper intentions in the world won't change the fact that you made the wrong decision. And we haven't appealed that. We can live with that.
That is an objective standard.
That is an objective standard.
And on an objective standard, she should have recused, so said the panel and the board.
And we did not object to that.
Okay.
And you do not object to the public reprimand sanction for that?
No, Your Honor. I think that's appropriate. It is a very difficult job to be a judge. It will be infinitely harder if the judge cannot identify herself or himself as a judge. And harder yet if once you're forced or asked to identify yourself as a judge, you have to stand mute and you can't communicate. Now, admittedly, once a judge identifies himself or herself to a law enforcement officer as a judge in response to a question, the judge proceeds beyond that at their peril. If you can convince the judge, if your real intent is not to abuse your office, but to get the same leeway that any other citizen would get, and if you can effectively communicate that to the law enforcement officer and make that law enforcement officer understand it, then you're fine. If you try that, if you endeavor down that road and the law enforcement officer says, yeah, I know what she said, but I thought she was trying to put her thumb on the scales because she was a judge, then you're going to be in a disciplinary proceeding. But the panel found and the board found that this respondent had good intentions when she explained to the Officer Price, I'm not asking for special treatment. I know you know I'm a judge. I want you to disregard that. What can I do as a citizen to try and convince this group of officers that my friend has not been drinking? She finally found the thing that she was looking for. You can talk to her in the booking room. She did. It didn't make a difference. But the panel found that the 1.3 violation should be dismissed. The board endorsed that recommendation. And for the reasons that we've discussed in our briefing here today, I respectfully request that you adhere to that recommendation and dismiss the 1.3 violation.
So we're only here on the 1.3 violation.
That's true. That's
the
only objection.
And the objection from the disciplinary counsel is only as to the 1.3.
That's true. That's the only issue before you.
And so if we would agree with your position, how does that affect the discipline that's been affected upon your client?
Well, the discipline that's the public reprimand is attached to the 1.2 and 2.11 violation, the failure to recuse.
Yes, and those aren't before us.
That's true. Well, of course, everything's before you. I mean, you can consider everything even without objection, but there's been no objection to that finding by either side.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Caligari, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Mr. Caligari.
Yes.
I've been thinking about all of this exchange. I've lived this life now for 21 years, and it's different than my prior lives. Sometimes in social settings or when I'm on a ski lift, I chat up people and inquire what they do. And sometimes they ask me, and frequently there, I'll tell them, I raise Angus cattle. And that's all I tell them.
Right.
Because that's what I'm comfortable with in that situation. If a law enforcement officer asked me the same question, and my answer was, I raise Angus cattle, would I be doing the right thing?
I believe you would. I believe you would be abiding by the code by, number one, answering the question honestly.
That's
what you
rather
do.
Deceptive, really. I'm not known for that.
But if it's accurate,
it's partially true.
Okay, but the intent, an objective person would understand why you're doing that, because you are so cognizant of the restrictions that are imposed of you on the code by the code. That you do not want anyone to get the impression that you are using your office to gain favorable treatment. And that's where I think Justice O'Connor points out, all she had to say in response to the question, even if it was asked, what are you, some kind of lawyer, is yes.
But Mr.
Now, let's assume, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, Mr. Caligari, the statement that Mr. Johnson makes regarding the language of the rule, 1.3, shall not use or attempt to use does sound as though it's the intention of the individual is very important, and that it would be subjective rather than objective. It doesn't say the appearance of. We don't have that in Rule 1.3.
Right, but I think you can infer intent from the totality of the circumstances using an objective standard. If we used a purely subjective standard, we'd never be able to discipline a judge unless the judge just came in and admitted that they were intending to abuse the position.
Or you had the witness, as Mr. Johnson said, you had the officer saying, it appeared to me that this person was trying to get special treatment. And we don't have that here, so there's no clear and convincing evidence.
Well, actually, we do have it, and again, that goes to the problem with the subjective standard. Mr. Johnson's focusing on what Officer Price said, which is fine. There was also two other officers, Officer Ballinger and Officer Garner, whose report was only in evidence, but Officer Ballinger testified that the judge put him in a bad and awkward position, and that when he was going to arrest Loya, she said, oh, don't do that. You don't have to do that. I'm the one that's been drinking. Would it help if I told you I'm a judge? So that's the whole problem with the subjective standard.
Mr. Caligiuri, I'm coming back to what the discussion is here. I've been a lot of different things, and I do have a life that I'm active in outside of the court, but on my right sits somebody who's been a judge most of her life, Justice O'Donnell, same thing. If he's asked by a police officer, what do you do, wouldn't the answer be, I'm a judge.
Right, and if that's where this ended, I wouldn't be standing here on this issue, but it didn't. She further injected her judgeship.
So you're not suggesting they've got to say, oh, I'm an attorney.
No, not at all. The only reason why that is even in the record is because she's stating that Officer Garner said, what are you, some kind of lawyer? But if he said, what do you do for a living, and she said a judge, and didn't say anything else during the proceedings, we wouldn't be here on that issue. It's that she continuously referred to herself as a judge in connection with her request for special consideration. And that's where Mr. Johnson and I disagree. You can't walk that fine line. If you're going to identify yourself as a judge, then you need to let the system run its course in order to preserve the integrity of the judiciary.
Thank you. Gentlemen, we'll take this matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.